Welcome once again to True Crime on Easy Street. We are coming to you from the Easy Street Restaurant, Bar, and Performance Hall. I'm Kelly Turner, and I'm not a doctor.
And I'm Katie Givens, and I'm not a lawyer.
And my name is Scott Wright, and I'm a mediocre journalist.
And we welcome ourselves to you, into your ears, to your car radio.
That's gross.
Your
What are you doing?
I don't know.
We've been on the air less than a minute, and we're already off the rails.
So we welcome ourselves,
everybody.
To you.
This is going to be nuts.
Yeah. Scott, yes, I'm doing my intro.
Sorry.
Okay. All right. So we're so happy to be here with you as you drive. Or what are you doing? Are you running? Are you walking?
Drink beer at the pool.
Are you drinking by the pool? Or
that's
on
who
the boat?
I imagine people to be who are listening. They're drinking by the pool on a Saturday afternoon.
God, that's fun.
Right? Ooh. Yeah.
I'm jealous.
If that's you, text us and give us a 5-star review. You're welcome.
Please. Yeah. And just like in the comments, just put by the pool.
Mm-hmm.
I love it so much. And I'm going to, you know what? I'm going to go even further. If you do a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and you put by the pool, we're going to give you a shout out.
Heck yeah.
Next week. Mm-hmm. We're going to read your name.
And a free t-shirt when we get some printed.
When we eventually get merch. Whenever that is. But we are so, so happy to be here with you once again to discuss some true crime. So Scott.
Yes.
What are we talking about this week?
Today we are talking about the June 18th, 1954 assassination of Albert Patterson, who at the time was the Attorney General elect of the state of Alabama.
All right.
If you're from Alabama and you remember your Alabama history from, was it 10th grade?
We did Alabama history. I think you get Alabama history in the ninth grade.
No. Okay.
Is it 8th grade?
I don't know. I thought it was 10th.
Oh, you
know, I didn't even thought about that.
Put that in the comments, too.
Yeah, let us know.
It's been
so long, we've forgotten.
My apologies.
Katie should still remember.
My apologies to all of
for
the teachers.
For Kelly and I, it's been too long.
Sorry. It's all ran together.
Anyway, so what happened was, and we'll get into the details of what happened, but this was a very big occurrence in the state of Alabama. 67 years ago, I guess now it was 54. So before we get started, here are some other things that were going on in the summer of 1954. And I went back to the library last week and I pulled some old, you can still go to the Cherokee County Public Library here in town. A great source of information from all the way back to the 30s.
Wait a minute, Scott, you walked into the library
with my feet
and got actual,
they're bound copies
books
of old. Yeah, they're as big as the table we're sitting at almost, or half as big. And you get bound copies in its entire year's worth of the Cherokee County Post Herald. And you go through them one page at a time. And it's they had a copy sent to the library and they bound them and they sent them off. They don't really do that much anymore, but from the 30s until the early 2000s, it's a big red. It's a gorgeous book. And some of the pages are in better shape than others, depending on how old they are.
That's wonderful because in this, you know, world of technology, no one does that anymore.
Right. If you go to the Cherokee County Library, you will see the librarian and Scott Wright.
That is correct. I am there doing my research.
Hey, shout out to the Cherokee County Library.
Certainly.
What a wonderful place.
That's not a joke to the Cherokee County Library.
No.
It's just a joke to libraries everywhere.
It is.
The great
really
ladies
is
who work there, they do a good job. As soon as they see me coming in, they grab their keys and go, you want to go to the back room where the old newspapers are?
Oh,
I'm like, yes,
they're
please.
They're fantastic.
Oh,
that's awesome.
They know what I need. They know,
love
they know
it.
I'm wheelhouse.
All right, I'm going to shut up.
No, fine. Anytime. So in 1954, here's one thing that happened. The United States Congress granted final approval to Alabama Power Company to construct a series of dams on the Coosa River, one of which was expected to be near Leesburg. And we all know today that that came to pass because Weiss Lake is right outside. And that was the first time that was officially confirmed that that was going to happen, was the summer of 1954. It was 4 more years before they began construction, but 54 was when people around here chose a side. We were either for the lake or against the lake, and there was a lot of that. But that's when it happened.
I have been to the dam on a field trip with my son.
I was there. I've been there a few times.
It was
the first time was a field trip in grade school, and I've been there since. But yeah, if you've
I
ever
also
been,
have some family history with this.
Go on.
Some of my family was, they were not on the side of the lake because They ended up losing quite a bit of land.
A lot of valuable
farming land.
Went
so,
underwater
yeah,
when
yeah.
Weiss Lake was backed up in
the 60s. It did. As much as I enjoy the lake today, you know, my family did not want it to happen.
Count your blessings. At least you're not working on a farm right now.
That's true. It's very hot.
Yeah. Maybe Alabama Power did you a favor. Another thing that happened in the summer of 1954, a little bit more obscure, but it has implications for U.S. history that maybe a lot of folks don't remember. The Battle of Dien Bien Phu took place in the summer of or in the spring of 1954, and the French lost to the Indochinese communists in Southeast Asia. And when that happened, it created this panic that communism was going to spread throughout Southeast Asia. It ended up with the United States Army sending troops to that part of the world. And we all know that as the 20-year-long conflagration that is the Vietnam War. So that is the battle that set off the Vietnam War in 1954. Another thing in 54, Brown versus Board of Education was a big deal in the summer of 54. And that was where the Supreme Court ruled unanimously that separate but equal in education was no longer constitutional, and that changed a lot of things that we weren't around to see the tumult that court case resulted in. We were fortunate enough to come along after that, but in the 50s and 60s and 70s, all over Alabama and the Southeast and really the whole country, Brown versus Board was a huge deal. Separate but equal was no longer constitutional.
Yes, it was a very big deal.
And quickly, two things right here in Cherokee County. Down at the Jitney Jungle on West Main Street, a T-bone steak was 59 cents a pound.
What is the Jitney Jungle?
It's not there anymore, but it's the little, you know where the laundromat was right across from, or next door to the post office, that little three-story, or that little...
Yes, yeah. Yes, I know where that is, and so do our listeners in Germany. They know exactly where that is.
Okay, sorry, maybe that was a little too much detail. Anyway, that used to be the Jitney Jungle, which was one of the first grocery stores in the county.
And okay.
T-bone steaks were 59 cents a pound.
Man, 54, that would be awesome today.
Wouldn't it? And lastly, the Center City Pool, which... The Center City Council announced just a few weeks ago will be closed down permanently in favor of a new pool and aquatic center that will be built over beside the National Guard Armory. It opened for the very first time. There were pictures on the front page of the new pool that wasn't even full of water yet. But it was a big deal in Center at the time. I learned to swim in that pool in the 70s when I was a child.
Yeah, I took swimming lessons
and
there.
And this is the year that's not, this is the first year it hasn't been open since it was built in 54.
Yeah, they had this huge high dive.
Yes.
That you had to work up the nerve to climb all the way. They had the regular size diving board, and you can climb up to there, uh-huh. or you can keep going
yeah.
and go off the high dive.
Yeah.
Did you? Scott, did you go off the high dive?
Of course.
Yeah.
I don't know if I ever dove off the high dive.
No, I never dove, but I did many times.
Yeah.
But you got to do a toothpick.
I accidentally did a belly flop once.
Oh, that's rough.
Still remember that afternoon.
Yep, I bet you do.
I think I'm still red from that. Ooh, and it tingles. Okay, so let's get to the story.
Yikes.
Yeah, sorry. We could have all done without that, right? Let's get to the story. This is the story of the political assassination of Albert Patterson. We'll get to John Patterson later. Of Albert Patterson in the summer of 1954. And this is an apple that was really, it's too big to chomp down on all at once. And so we're going to take a few bites around this thing, and we'll eventually get down to the rotten core of everything that is the story of this horrible thing that happened in Phoenix City, Alabama. Some of the sources that I used, a book called When Good Men Do Nothing by Alan Grady. There's a novelization of the story called Wicked City that I read after I read When Good Men Do Nothing. And I realized that it's a really good story that sticks directly to the facts. The author creates a couple of additional characters that he uses to move the story along. One of them is kind of him dropped into history, and he's a gas station attendant. It doesn't matter what the specifics are, but it's a really good source of accurate information about what happened if you want to read a novelization of the story instead of just straight facts. But I read them both just to be sure. And then there's plenty of documentaries on YouTube that you can see for free. And just a brief history of what was going on in Phoenix City, or what Phoenix City really is even. It was called Sin City as far back as the Civil War. Geographically, it is located in the very far eastern section of the state of Alabama, about in the center of the state, a little bit below, directly across the Chattahoochee River, which defines the border between Alabama and Georgia in that part of the state. And if you're an Alan Jackson fan, you've heard him sing about Way Down Yonder on the Chattahoochee, and that's what he's referring to. It was a lively place. Anytime after the Civil War, there was crazy stuff going on. in what became Phoenix City. It had several names earlier before it became Phoenix City. And there's a bunch of reasons for that that I'm not going to get into. If you want to look it up, I suggest Google. Prohibitionists were late to the party in Alabama, like they were in a lot of other places. But by the early 1900s, they had gotten into Alabama. They took over the state legislature eventually in 1914. And in 1916, they had they grabbed a hold of enough clout in Montgomery that they could go to Phoenix City and clean the place up. So they did. There was a big cleanup in Phoenix City in 1916. Unfortunately, 2 years later, the United States Army built Fort Benning across the river in Columbus, Georgia, and everything started to come undone again.
Well, for those who don't know, what is Fort Benning and why is that important to this story?
So Fort Benning, named after a Confederate general like a bunch of U.S. Army bases are, despite the paradox that that is, if you think about it, it was built after World War One because a lot of soldiers came home from World War One, and the generals in the military didn't really feel like they had been trained sufficiently to take care of themselves or to shoot accurately or just to do the things that they needed to do to not get killed in a foreign war. So they built Fort Benning. Today there are over 100,000 troops there, and it's military, it's their families, civilian support staff. If you learn to shoot a gun, drive a tank, or jump out of an airplane with a parachute, you probably, if you've ever been in the Army, you learned at Fort Benning. That's the home of the U.S. Infantry, the Army's U.S. Infantry. So what you have when this happens in 1918 into the 20s, you have hundreds of thousands of U.S. soldiers coming through every year with a ton of money to spend and nowhere to spend it because nothing's happening in Columbus, Georgia. And Phoenix City is a very poor city with basically no tax base. And this is in Russell County, by the way, if you're an Alabama native and you want to know what county it is. That's important depending on which of those books that I mentioned that you read. So here we are in the roaring 20s. The whole country's basically drunk for a decade, right? Even despite prohibition. Eventually, Phoenix City becomes the county seat of Russell County. That's why I mentioned that. I remember now. And what that did was that meant that all of the corruptible, potentially corruptible county officials that someone in Phoenix City who has a gambling establishment might want to bribe to make sure it doesn't close down is right there down the street. So it gets really easy for the government, the local government in Phoenix City to become corruptible. And sure enough, it does. And that's according to Grady, who wrote When Good Men Do Nothing. So now the county officials are here. The gambling establishments are there. There's gambling, there's lottery games, there's prostitution, there's illegal alcohol. And the group that is running all of this is called the Machine, all right? Commonly, in a lot of the books that I read, they just refer to them as the Machine. And then it's basically what they've done is they have reverted to the way that the town was before 1916. So we're right back where we started. The cleanup in 16 has been a complete failure over time. 20 years later, we're right back where we started.
Is there anybody in this town that wants to clean it up? Or is everybody just, you know, the Machine?
It's not just the Machine. And it's weird because the way that they're described in the book is that the book that I read the most, the people who run these illegal establishments, they're right there in town. They're little league coaches. They sit at the same pew with you at church on Sunday. They donate to local charities. They're members of the American Legion. So they're right there in town. It's kind of like, you're a gambling boss, and I'm the local convenience store owner, and we go to church on Sunday. Our kids play baseball together. I just don't go hang out with you on Saturday because you're moving prostitutes upstairs out the back door and selling alcohol, and you've got a bunch of slot machines along the back wall that are hidden by a fake wall.
And are you just afraid to say something to me, yeah, or are you just... You're purposely turning your head out of fear.
No, you're turning your head out of fear because what kept the corruption in place was the fact that all of the local officials are right there. There's a ton of money coming through Phoenix City. All those soldiers coming over with their salaries, their paychecks every week with nothing else to do. So they lose it all in the gambling halls. A lot of them are crooked. So they're going to lose at the roulette wheel. There's a button under the table and they can hit it and it's going to hit 22 every time when you bet on 24. A lot of them are crooked. Some of them are not. But a lot of these guys are new in town. They don't know the difference. So they go over and they lose all their money. And the reason that perpetuates is because it's easiest for the people who run the gambling halls to give up 10% of their profits and give it to the county solicitor, the district attorney, we would call him, or the sheriff, to make sure that nothing happens to stop that flow of money coming. And eventually, the implications are that some of that money ends up on the state level, and in some cases, maybe even all the way up to the governor's office. Allegedly. That's one of our favorite words here on this podcast. Allegedly.
Allegedly.
We don't want to get sued in season one.
Nope.
Season three, I don't care anymore, but season one, let's don't do it. Short version is there are plenty of good people in the town, but they were really powerless to do anything because the law's involved. So there's still some opposition that starts to grow to all of this lawlessness by the mid-1940s. But the anti-vice groups get off to a slow start. By the 50s, though, the deputy sheriff who's in charge of looking the other way, his name was Albert Fuller. The county solicitor, what we would call the district attorney, like I said, was a man named Arch Farrell. And they were two of the biggest impediments to getting anything done about the gambling and the prostitution and the alcohol because they were in cahoots with the machine. The Russell County Betterment Association is created in the late 40s, early 50s by a guy named Hugh Bentley, who was a sporting goods store owner, I believe. But it isn't long before his house mysteriously is blown up by 36 sticks of dynamite. Miraculously, his wife and son, who were in the home at the time, are relatively uninjured.
How is that possible?
I'm not sure, because I saw a picture of what that house looked like when it was over, and there was nothing left.
Oh,
they must have
been
standing by a window. You've all seen those Arnold Schwarzenegger movies where miraculously he's by the window when the explosion goes off and it dumps him into a mattress factory next door. Maybe it was something like that, because it looked pretty violent, but no major injuries.
Wow.
Yeah. So one of the people who gets his ire up when this happens, and the explosion of Bentley's house got a lot of people pissed off.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was a local attorney named Albert Pattison. He's in his late 50s at the time. And he had been tired of the illegal activity for a while. Earlier in his career, he had defended some of the gambling folks, because if you wanted to be an attorney, a successful attorney in Phoenix City, you had to hold your nose sometimes and do your job. But at this point, he's had enough of it. He's 60 years old, and he's like, fuck it, I'm tired of these guys. I'm doing this my way. All right? So he decides, because of all of the corruption at the local level, and the rumor is that the corruption runs all the way up to Montgomery, right up to Goat Hill, I'm just going to run for Attorney General of the state of Alabama, and I'll handle this myself. The Attorney General in the state of Alabama can go in any crevice and crack as long as the law is on his side and take care of anything that's illegal and get rid of it.
Well, he probably had no chance of winning a local election, so at least with the statewide election, he had more of a chance.
That's a good point. I didn't even think about that, but that was the platform that he ran on. Everybody knew how crooked Phoenix City was at the time, and a lot of people, especially in, you know, right here in the Bible Belt, didn't like it, so he took his platform, his campaign slogan, statewide, and that was it. I'm going to clean up Phoenix City. This group of people that we've kind of laid out a little bit to make sure that he didn't get elected, they decide that, first of all, they're going to try to buy the election, commit election fraud, and make sure that he does not win. He's in the Democratic primary. And back then, if you won the Democratic nomination, there probably wasn't even a Republican on the ticket.
Yeah, back then, Alabama was a Democratic state.
The worm has turned here in the state of Alabama. Now a Democrat can't get elected. Back then, a Republican couldn't get elected. And that's just, you know, times change. But if you won the Democratic primary or the Democratic runoff, if there was one, you were pretty much the new guy. And so what the people who wanted to make sure that Phoenix City didn't get cleaned up wanted to do is make sure that Pattison was not the nominee. And so they set about, in between, there was the primary in May, and then there was a runoff in June, because Pattison didn't get over 50% of the vote.
Yeah, he got a plurality, not a majority.
Not a majority. So there was a runoff. Pattison, there's a bunch of craziness that goes on, politically speaking, in the 3 weeks after the primary before the runoff. But Pattison ends up squeaking out the election. And that's when the folks who don't want Phoenix City to be shut down realize we're going to have to do something drastic. So they drive all over the state to try and convince election officials to change the voting tallies. And one of the places they go very specifically is to Birmingham in Jefferson County. And witnesses later confirm that Farrell and Attorney General Silas Garrett went to Birmingham and asked them successfully to add 600 votes to Patterson's opponent's final tally.
Yeah. Now Farrell was the circuit solicitor, who is what we call now the district attorney.
Correct. And Cy Garrett, if I didn't mention it, was the attorney general for the state of Alabama at the time. So you've got the standing, the current AG, the county DA, conspiring to try and keep Albert Patterson from becoming the next attorney general, because they know the first thing he's going to do is take a mop bucket to downtown Phoenix City. And that's a week before he's killed. And Albert Patterson knows that this has gone on. He's got people all over the state too. And there's some speculation that maybe they were all vote fixing. Who knows who really won it, but Albert Patterson knew about what happened in Jefferson County, and there was a grand jury already that had been, Katie, what's the word I'm looking for? A grand jury has been convened.
Yes.
Right? So you've convened a grand jury. They're already investigating it. Albert Patterson has told everybody all week long, come Monday morning, June the 20th, I'm going to go to Birmingham, and I'm going to hang your asses out to dry. And it's Friday night at 9 o'clock.
For election fraud.
For election fraud. And it's Friday night at 9 o'clock that Albert Patterson, effectively the next attorney general of the state of Alabama, is killed.
So you're saying June 18th, 1954, Albert Patterson is killed.
That is correct.
So, well, what happened that night?
Well, in Grady's book, When Good Men Do Nothing, he does a really great job of laying out the precise timeline. He gets the police transcripts and the eyewitness transcripts, and he lays the whole thing out almost in too much detail. I mean, if I wasn't studying for a podcast, I probably would have just skipped ahead, but I needed to know these things, and I'm not going to lay it all out for you, but basically, Albert Patterson is working late in his office on the second floor of a building in downtown Phoenix City that night. He finishes up about 9 o'clock. He heads down the stairs to the alleyway behind his office building. His car is parked in the alley, but very close to the main street, like the first parking spot in the alley. That's where he's parked at an angle. He's getting into his car. Someone walks up to him, fires 4 shots at him, and then runs away down this darkened alley. Patterson stumbles out of the alley. He doesn't have far to stumble because the car is right there, like I said, onto the main highway. I think it's 14th Avenue in Phoenix City, and collapses dead on the sidewalk.
You can almost just imagine this. That's out of a movie.
Yeah,
this is stuff of movies.
It's funny you mention that. There is a movie called, I forget the title of the movie, but it's 1955. I tried to buy it, but it's $55 on Amazon to watch this movie. And it's one of those noir films. Like I said, 55. They actually shot it in Phoenix City right where it happened. They showed some clips from it in some of the documentaries that I watched. But they shot a movie, tried to tell the story. One of the descriptions that I read, it's very fictionalized. You know, they had to play it up to make everybody seem even more violent and crazy than they were. But there is a movie about it. If you want to go find it, it's out there. So anyway, Grady writes that there are dozens of people around. I mean, it's not like this is a deserted city street, technically. There are cafes up and down 14th Avenue. There are people walking up and down the street. And all of a sudden, everybody knows who Albert Patterson is because he walks with a limp. He was injured in World War I. So everybody recognizes him from 50 feet away, even in shadow form, because they know he's the lawyer that works right upstairs and he walks with a limp. It's Albert Patterson and he's limping, but it's a strange limp, one of the witnesses says. He looks like he's drunk, and then he realizes, oh, it's Mr. Patterson. And then he falls over and he rushes over to him and he's bleeding, his jaw's blown off. Well, one of the first shots was right down the mouth and another one into the arm, and it shot into his torso. And that was the one that killed him because it punctured a lung and he bled to death. Short story. But the thing about all those witnesses was it didn't matter. Everybody was scared to talk about gambling. Everybody was afraid to tell the cops because first of all, the cops are on the take. And second of all, it's not going to do any good. There's as good a chance as any that if you go and tell the cops, hey, I just saw a slot machine in the Bama Club over on 14th, they're going to lock you up for the night, accuse you of being drunk and disorderly and turn you out the next day and let that be your warning not to come back in here and tell us that again.
Right. And then you see that this man has been shot to death, the man who's trying to stop it. And there's no good for you to tell anyone because the current attorney general is trying to stop him.
Yeah, I mean, there's what for the just entire state. The, guy who, yeah. the most persistent man who was going to try to stop all this, they just shot him dead in the street.
So I'm going to keep my mouth shut. Right. You're already afraid. Now you're very afraid.
So suffice it to say, the investigation into Albert Patterson's murder got off to a very slow start.
Well, what started it going a little faster. Like, well, how do everybody's afraid? I would be afraid. I can honestly say I probably would not help this investigation at all.
It'd be a hard decision to make. I mean, we've got the dynamite, we've got the dead body in the street.
And I mean, especially if you have a family, you have any loved ones or friends or anything, you know, you're not going to want to. And then your own life is at stake.
Well, the one thing that I think nobody counted on is the fact that Albert Patterson's loved one, his son, his 33-year-old son, John, who is a World War II veteran, spent some time in the European theater. He was on General Patton's staff at one point during World War II. He was also an attorney in Phoenix City at the time.
So enter the young badass.
Yes. Exactly. So when his father is killed, first thing that happens is, I mean, he wants to get to the bottom of this, but he also becomes the favorite to replace him on the Democratic ticket for attorney general. And all that he needs to say is, yes, I will take that position. He doesn't want to. This is not the life that John Patterson has ever wanted to lead. He didn't want to be anywhere around. He wanted to be a trial attorney. But in one of the documentaries, it's an interview with John Patterson himself in his later years. This is in the 2000s. So he's, you know, he's in his 70s or 80s, still living in Alabama. Oh, and he just passed away last week, by the way, at the age of 99.
Oh, wow.
In his hometown. And I forget the name of his hometown, but he just passed away. I shared that on our Cherokee County Post-Herald Facebook page last week. That's what I'm the managing editor of, in case anybody besides the two of you didn't know that. Anyway, so he just passed away last week.
So not so mediocre of a journalist. Plug.
Well, I just stumbled across it. But he, where was I? What was I talking about?
You're talking about John Patterson.
He passed away last week.
Passed away last week. He is moved to pick up the mantle that his father had carried. He didn't really want to get involved in the whole anti-gambling thing. He wanted to be a trial attorney, but he had to kind of go along with his dad even before his dad was killed, because the only way he was ever going to be able to be a successful trial attorney was if you got the mob out of the way, because he didn't want to hold his nose and defend mobsters. He wanted to defend normal, upstanding citizens.
The town is Goldville, Alabama.
There you go. Thank you very much. And it was last week, right?
Yes, June 4th.
Yeah. Eventually, he gets talked into becoming the Democratic nominee for attorney general. He didn't want to do it, but they talked him into it. And as soon as he said, yes, I'll do it, there's no doubt that he's going to be the next attorney general of the state of Alabama. Everybody in the state's going to vote for the guy whose father just got killed trying to clean up Phoenix City.
Exactly. I mean, and I'm not trying to be crude or insensitive, but that projected the fact that his father was murdered in the street just projected. I mean, he's going to get way more votes now.
Oh, absolutely. And he's probably not even running against anyone anyway, because now he's the Democratic nominee and it's Alabama in 1954. Maybe there was a Republican nominee, but it was a token nominee like Democratic nominees are today in Alabama. But first, before all that happens, the investigation begins immediately. But now Patterson is a member, the younger Patterson, we'll just say John Patterson. I'll just say John Patterson to be clear. He's a member of the RBA, the Russell Betterman Association, which Hugh Bentley formed and got his house blown up. But he's immediately suspicious of Deputy Albert Fuller and Solicitor Arch Farrell. He thinks they're the top two suspects in this case. And he said so publicly many times. In response to this, and since Albert Patterson was about to become the next attorney general, Alabama Governor Gordon Persons sends a team of state investigators in to help. And because Governor Persons is afraid, at least slightly, that there might be a riot in the streets in Phoenix City because the one guy who was going to clean up this shithole is now dead, there is some discussion about sending in the National Guard. So he reaches out to the head of the Alabama National Guard, General Crack Hanna, and I forgot to write down his real name, but he was called Crack because he was a crack shot.
Another badass.
Yes. Yeah. A guy who just, in John Patterson's own words in the documentary I watched, projected authority and confidence. So Persons picked the right guy. Mm-hmm. It seems like the folks in Montgomery realized, well, hell, boys. It was good while it lasted, but the run in Phoenix City is about to end. And there's still people in Phoenix City trying to hang on to this. And they're losing their grasp. You know, the little Tweety Bird thing where he's running out of pitties. They're down to one pity. All right. We'll explain that to Katie.
You see, Katie, yeah. Tweety Bird was a cartoon.
It's a little yellow bird that always outsmarted Sylvester the cat. We'll get to that later.
Many years ago.
So he sends Crack Hannah down, and Crack Hannah comes back a couple days later and says, look, if you want this mess cleaned up, you're going to have to send in the National Guard. Otherwise, it's just going to keep going. Governor Persons doesn't want to be the first governor in the history of the United States of America to declare martial law. And so he declines. He says, let's hold off on that and try not to do it. And even Patterson in the documentary, himself having later become governor, spoiler, he understands the hesitance that person shows. He said later, John Patterson did, I understand why he didn't want to do that, because that's a historical event in the history of the country if you're the first governor to ever declare martial law. So he declines to do that at the time, but John Patterson doesn't care. He wants something done. He doesn't trust the local officials. He hops on a plane, flies to Washington, D.C., and tries to get an audience with J. Edgar Hoover, the head of the FBI. Hoover declines to see him, but some of Hoover's people say, look, we understand that you want to get to the bottom of this, but it's not a federal matter at this point. It's a state matter. Mm-hmm. We can't help you right now. They end up getting some help from the FBI down the road when it's a logical right thing to do, but not yet at this point. So John Patterson goes back to Alabama, but the newspapers pick up on this. When he gets back, he lands at the airport and all the newspaper guys are there and they interview him. And he says, I try to go get some help from the feds because I don't trust these idiots in Phoenix City. That puts the pressure on the governor, Governor Persons. And he eventually in July sends Crack Hannah down in a swarm of National Guard troops. And they get out that mop bucket we were talking about. I mean, there are pictures of slot machines and roulette wheels and, everything you can imagine that is related to vice and sin piled up, being destroyed in the streets. Mm-hmm. John Patterson himself said in that documentary, General Hanna, quote, had that place cleaned out lock, stock, and barrel in just a few days. I mean, the Constitution is suspended.
And nobody's arguing with him.
No, everybody in the town, that's what somebody else in one of the documentaries said. It liberated the entire community. It gave everybody the impetus to go, okay, they finally mean it. They're really going to clean it up this time. So there's no more silence when the police come around. They start to get all these tips about all of the different places.
To clarify, though, martial law was declared.
Absolutely.
It was absolutely. And if, for those who don't know what martial law is, that means that military authority comes in and civilian law is suspended completely.
The first thing they did was everybody who was wearing a badge in Phoenix City got their pink slip. They're gone.
Yes.
Solicitor Farrell, the sheriff, Deputy Sheriff Fuller, they're all out of a job. They're gone. You are no longer in charge of this place. And that was all of the clarification that a lot of people in town needed to go, okay, we can help now. They'll listen to us. Because somebody will listen.
The National Guard was now
they
in
felt
control.
Safe. Yeah. They felt safe to come clean with what they know, what they've seen.
And eventually that resulted in 734 indictments and over 80 convictions.
Wow.
That's just for the gambling part. Nothing to do with the murder plot.
Yes.
That's just the gambling.
Gosh.
But it's the beginning of the end of gambling in Phoenix City.
I should say so.
Right?
Yep.
There's still an assassination to solve, but the mobsters had all faded away. It turns out the mobsters had nothing to do with Albert Patterson's death. They were too smart for that because they knew that this would happen. If they are implicated in the death, it doesn't matter if it happened. They would never let it happen. If they'd known it was going to happen, they would have stopped it, because anything is better than the National Guard coming into your town and the Constitution being suspended and all of your stuff being piled up in the street and burned after it's been covered in gasoline.
Yeah, that's not good for business.
That is terrible for business.
Yep.
So Patterson takes office as the new attorney general in January of 1955. He continues to clean up a Phoenix City. All the while, he's overseeing the investigation of his father's murder. And at some point around this time, it's discovered that Solicitor Farrell, who we've mentioned, was on a phone call with Silas Garrett, the Alabama attorney general, at just the exact moment in time that Patterson was killed on June the 18th, 1954. And in fact, the investigators hadn't found out that information yet when they got a tip from somebody who knew somebody who knew somebody. Hey, don't worry about looking at these guys. They had nothing to do with it. There is the record of the phone call that they were on at the exact moment.
So on Friday night,
9 o'clock.
At like 9 o'clock, they're on the phone talking business. Now, how often did this happen between the two of them?
I don't know if we got into...
How often did the two of them just get on the phone on the weekend?
I don't know, but
in the middle of the night and talk business.
It was weird enough that every alarm bell that was plugged into an outlet went off
exactly
at once. And so immediately, maybe Patterson was right all along. Maybe these idiots did have something to do with it. And it turns out that they were the ones, like I mentioned earlier, they were conspiring to commit the election fraud that took place in Jefferson County. It was 600 votes that they added to Patterson's opponent in the Democratic runoff. That was quickly figured out because there was a local official there who was in charge of those numbers. And when they put the spotlight on him, he gave them up.
He said, I'm going to see.
Yeah. He was.
I got some big names
two
for
bird
you.
References in the same show. We got Tweety Bird and now a songbird.
Yep. I got some big names for you guys.
Tweety Bird and a stool pigeon.
Or a rat.
And I already mentioned the part about Patterson making it well known that he was going to go to Birmingham on Monday and testify before that grand jury. And it turns out that that was the reason that he was killed. At least the best scenario that anybody has been able to put together. But it's those three, Farrell, Garrett, and Fuller, who are all indicted for first-degree murder.
Who's the trigger person?
I don't know that we ever got to the bottom of exactly who the trigger person was. It was, well, Katie will tell you what happened in court.
Do you think that they intended to murder him that night? It sounds like a poor-conceived murder plot on the sidewalk in front of dozens of potential witnesses, driving down the street, eating dinner in the cafes that line, downtown Phoenix City.
See, I thought the same thing because they were indicted for first degree murder and
which is premeditated.
And that's what I think. I don't think that the two men, and it turned out, I guess I'm going to have to give away. We already said that the three of them, Garrett, Farrell, and Fuller, were indicted for this murder. It was Farrell and Fuller who ended up being, we can place Garrett in Montgomery. On the other end of that phone call, or investigators could. But if you're a conspirator in a murder plot, you can be convicted of first degree murder as well. So that's why he was included in the indictment. I don't think that they went down there that night on that sidewalk. They all knew each other. These guys had lived together for 20 years. I don't think they went down there to murder him. I think that they went down there to try and see if they could buy him off or get him to change his mind about going to Birmingham on Monday morning. Hey, look, man, you won. We'll back off. Leave us out of this. I don't know. It'll just be speculation.
Not go to his office if you're not wanting to kill him.
Well, they were. He was at the car right in front of the door.
Yeah, but why not knock on the door and go see him during office hours? Why wait until he's out in his car in the middle of the night?
Well, here's one reason why. Farrell's office in the courthouse had a view of Patterson's office window. And there is speculation that when they saw him turn his light off, they were in their office as well. Mm-hmm. Conspiring to figure out some
Watching.
Way. Hey, there he is. He just Watching. Turned his light
there
off.
He is.
Let's run across the street 200 yards away and talk to him and see if we can talk him out of this.
I don't know. I don't agree with that.
I don't know.
I think if you want to talk to him, you call him on the phone or you walk over there.
Maybe so. But anyway, they end up, some witnesses, after people felt comfortable talking about what they had seen.
Yes.
Some witnesses put both of them there. Some witnesses put one or the other there.
Right. And he's just said, I'm going to get you all for voter fraud. I'm going to.
Absolutely.
It's happening.
Monday morning, 9 o'clock.
Monday morning.
Yeah. Pack your bags.
So
you're going to jail. Or you're going to lose your job or you're going to embarrass your family or serve time.
So if I'm meeting you in the dark and alley on Friday night, I don't think I want to talk.
And maybe that's what Albert Patterson said, hey, I'm not talking to you guys.
Yeah.
And there's one
And I don't
version.
Think they want to talk to him either. I mean, I just don't. I think that
okay.
they,
yeah.
I mean, I really think it was, they said, okay, we got to take care of this.
One, yeah.
We got to take care of it.
One of them looked at the other. Hey.
Said, hey,
And it's the sheriff and the DA. Who's coming after him?
Yeah.
Exactly.
They control the law in Phoenix City.
And I may be
we
wrong.
Could totally get away
totally
with
Totally may be wrong, but I just don't.
Yeah.
I see if you want to have a conversation with this man, you're not going to do it in a darkened alley at 9 o'clock on Friday night.
Well, ultimately, this entire case is going to come down to who the jury believes. And that's when I said I wasn't going to say that.
Oh,
take it out. I said I wasn't going to say, and that's Katie's turn.
The three men, let's go back over who they are. First one is, the sheriff, Albert Fuller. Second one is the circuit solicitor, or the district attorney, as we call it, Arch Farrell. The third one is the attorney general, Cy Garrett. So Cy can be placed in Montgomery at the time of the shooting. He also takes off to Texas, checks into a mental facility, spends the better part of a few years, I do believe.
Yeah, he had a history of mental illness, but it was
also going to say good move.
Yeah, well, and it was.
That's one way to stay out of jail.
He did have a history of it, but he had been treated before while he was attorney general. He like took months off of his job mm-hmm. to go be treated for mental illness and had been back on the job for a few months when all of these events took place.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So the charges against him were dropped. Farrell and Fuller were both indicted for first degree murder by grand jury of Russell County, Alabama, which is where the story takes place. This happens in December of 1954. In January of 1955, they file to have the trial moved out of Russell County.
Yeah, to Birmingham, mm-hmm. right?
Change of venue, yes. To the 10th Circuit, which is Jefferson County, which is where Birmingham is. And on the same day that they're arraigned in Russell County, it's agreed to move the trials to Jefferson County.
Okay.
It doesn't seem like they would get a fair trial in their county.
Well, when I got to the trial part, I stopped reading because my brain was full of useless information and it was Katie's turn to fill her brain with useless information.
So basically the same trials commence and they both plead not guilty, of course. This is in January of 1955, end of January 1955. They both plead not guilty. Trials commence in February. Farrell, spoiler alert, is acquitted. He's found not guilty.
But his trial was second.
His trial was second.
I had an attorney tell me, you always want to go second, especially after the Wilson case.
You know, we've had several cases that have shown that, yes. Spoiler alert, the second trial was Arch Farrell, the DA. He is found not guilty. Fuller, who is the sheriff, who has the first trial, which, as Kelly's mentioned, we've learned that you always want to go second, apparently.
I had an attorney tell me that. Yeah, you always want to go second.
It's a good chance to figure out what the first bunch did wrong.
Exactly. Yeah.
His trial lasts 4 weeks, and he is found guilty of first-degree murder, sentenced to life in prison. Main reason being, it was his gun that
Knew they found a gun.
It was his gun.
Yes. Okay. His gun.
Again, I never read that far, but I didn't know they found a gun.
It was his gun. He's the sheriff. He shot him.
Yeah. I guess they don't have all the ballistics testing back then that they did now, but
probably not.
From what I've read, you know, the type moving, because he was shot four times from the type of bullets and everything, they could pretty much discern that it was the type of gun that Fuller had, and you know, Fuller carried a gun.
Yes, as a deputy sheriff, he wore white suits, a big white cowboy hat, mm-hmm. and guns on both sides. Was the way he was described in When Good Men Do Nothing.
And so it went back and forth on, you know, who, you know, different men could shoot the same
gun.
Sure,
I could grab your gun out of your holster and shoot him. And there was some speculation that was what happened.
Yes.
But nobody will ever know. And the guy who owned the gun went to jail.
Yes, because Farrell was poised to be on that phone call mm-hmm. with Garrett at the time. So if he's on a phone call, he's not committing a crime. So the jury believed.
That's what the jury believed. But, you know, the story that some of the former reporters from that era that I saw in one of the documentaries said, look, we all know what happened. We know that he placed that phone call, laid the phone down, said, sigh, hold the line. And it's 200 yards over to Patterson's office.
Right, because
office.
He's not on a cell phone. He's on a landline.
He's on a landline. And as long as that line is open, he can go back and say, I was on this phone the whole time. Mm-hmm. And the only person who would ever be able to know that would be if an operator was listening into that call at the time. And it was a busy Saturday night. They actually talked to the operator who helped place that call. And they asked her, we know you're not supposed to, but you can help us solve a murder investigation. And did you hear anything? And she said, no.
Scott, you're going to have to give us a history on that, on operators. We have a lot of listeners here, a little bit younger.
Yeah.
Tell us about operators in the 50s.
Well, back then you picked up a phone and you, maybe you had a dial tone then, but you either had a dial tone. I think you had to hit the receiver or you had to wake up the operator. I mean, what happened is you would tap the phone and a light on a switchboard that a person was looking at would flash, and that would tell them, hey, somebody wants to make a phone call at this number. And they would plug in a plug kind of like the ones we use here for our headphones and connect you. And then they would say to their headphone, who do you want to talk to? Well, I want to talk to BR549, if anybody gets my hee-haw reference. And you can plug that in to BR549, and that call is connected.
Or like if you watch the Andy Griffith Show, it was Sarah. He'd pick up the phone and go, Sarah,
I need to make a phone call.
Call Aunt B.
Yeah, get Aunt B for me.
Yeah, and they would connect you. And so they spoke with one of these operators.
And she said, I did not listen to the call. I don't know if there was a conversation taking place or not.
And that's probably wise of her just to especially the people we were talking about, just patch it on through and move along, Sarah.
Right.
I don't know that her name was Sarah, but I was just saying that.
After Sheriff Albert Fuller is found guilty, he, of course, files a motion for a new trial literally a month after he's found guilty. They file like an amendment to this motion. That motion's heard. Motion's overruled. He does not get a new trial.
Okay.
But he only spends 10 years in prison for that life sentence. We're learning now that life sentences in the 50s didn't mean the same that they mean today.
Viola Hyatt spent 10 years for two hatchet shotgun murders. 10 years.
Yes, 10 years.
So he's paroled.
And you kill the Attorney General of the state of Alabama. 10 years.
Yep. 10 years.
Yeah, he's paroled, and he actually passes away the same year he's paroled. But until his dying days, he claims his innocence, says he's innocent, said he had nothing to do with this murder.
Nothing to do with it, huh, Boss Hogg?
Yeah, right? I was going to say that earlier, but who would get a Boss Hogg reference these days?
Me! I got it! We're the only two. Yeah. We're the only two. Hey, I know who will get it. Kevin Green. You got
Kevin
that.
Kevin Green would get that reference.
You got right? that. Kevin Green will get that.
Totally. Cy Garrett never faced charges. He fought extradition. He was in Texas for a long time, and he fought extradition. John Patterson said in that documentary, I tried for 9 years to get Cy Garrett into the state of Alabama so I could charge him with my father's murder, and none of the legal maneuvers that I tried ever worked. So he hid behind his mental illness to keep from doing that. And John Patterson goes on to be, he's a hugely popular attorney general. He fought lawn sharks, fought against desegregation. Remember, it's 1954, and everybody's freaking out about Brown versus Board. And he fought a lot of corruption in the Folsom administration, who was the governor who was elected at the same time he was elected attorney general. And then 4 years later, John Patterson runs for governor to replace Folsom and does, and he defeats a young George Wallace for governor, the only time George Wallace ever lost a statewide race. And he had a famous, awful, disgusting comment about how he would make sure he never lost an election like that again. I'm not going to say it on the air. If you want to look it up, you can. But
George Wallace said after he lost.
Yeah, that was just, that's the way politics were back in the 50s. So sorry, everybody. We weren't around.
Ugly,
then.
Ugly history.
We were not around then.
But what a brave man, John Patterson. That's amazing.
And you know, I think of him as like Truman. I mean, Truman didn't want to be president when FDR died in 45. And he always said, I hate this job. I don't want any. He was kind of forced into the role, and he ended up being a pretty good president. I feel like Patterson was the same way. He didn't want that. He wanted to be a trial attorney. And then, well, I've got to find the guy who killed my dad. And then he realized, you know, this governor who before me, Folsom, what a bunch of crooks. And, you know, politics in Alabama was and probably still is crooked these days, allegedly. asterisk. But he thought, you know, I can do a better job than these guys. I'm just going to run for governor, and I have the platform to do it. I have the popularity to do it. I can run on a, hey, let's clean up. I've cleaned up Phoenix City. Let's clean up the state of Alabama. And he was elected governor.
It's just the story. It's just stuff of superheroes. You know, the tragic event that happens that puts them in a situation they really don't want to be in, but find that they're made for it.
Yeah.
This was something he was made to do, and then lived 99 years and passed away 10 days ago or 12 days ago when
depending on what day you're listening to this.
In Goldville, Alabama.
And by most accounts, a pretty good fellow. World War II veteran on top of that.
Wow.
Good man, for the most part.
And just to clarify a couple of things in the trial that I skipped over was that one of the main reasons that the trial for both of them didn't go exactly the same was that one of the prosecution's eyewitnesses perjured himself on the stand.
Whoops.
So that was a big deal. His name was Cecil Paget, and I didn't find the exact terms of what he said.
I remember seeing his name, but I don't either. I don't remember what he did.
But he perjured himself in both trials. So I guess that...
What is he doing? I mean, are they not prepping this guy for the trial?
His testimony again... I mean, he was a... For the prosecution testimony.
And then they brought him back.
Yeah.
Maybe he didn't perjure himself the first time. It was only terrible. Maybe he said something different the second time from what he said the first time. Didn't we have another case where somebody perjured themselves? Oh, it was the guy in the Black Widow case. The first time in the first sister's trial, he said
No, that's not Black Widow. You're talking about Dr. Wilson. Are you talking about Dr. Wilson, the sisters?
The sisters, yes. Supposedly Mr. White, James White, who committed the murder.
Yes.
He told one story in the first sister's trial. perjured himself in the second trial when he told the story a different way. Maybe it was a similar situation here. I don't know.
Possibly.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's kind of from what I've read has led to what got Fuller paroled. And Farrell actually, you know, he got reinstated to the state bar after all of this.
Oh, I hope.
Are you kidding me?
Yes, he continued to practice law in Phoenix City.
Are you kidding me?
Well, I wouldn't hire him. Yeah. I wouldn't hire that guy.
Look, okay, so I went into this not knowing the story. I'm just going to do it again. Wow. So,
drink up.
Drink it up. I mean, I've said it several times during this. I am literally sitting on the edge of my chair. I love this story. And I don't love it because it's a tragedy and I'm not making light of these are real people and they lived real lives and amazing lives. That's why I'm on the edge of my seat. I mean, I love this story. Yeah. I love the son stepping up and cleaning up what his father started. That's what a great story.
Well, you picked this story out and I'm glad that you did because I read this book 15 years ago and I'd forgotten a lot of it. And I got a chance to read it again and read some more stuff. And I really feel like I have a much better understanding of what took place now than I did even when I read it the first time. So thank you for picking this story.
Man, I did great and I didn't even know it.
Dropping it in my lap.
Killing it every week, Kelly.
Absolutely, Kelly. You're the best.
Thanks. No, I love it. You're a great storyteller, Scott. And Katie, with the trial, I'm loving it. Because I don't understand trials and I don't understand, you know, I'm not a doctor. I'm not that smart.
Or a lawyer.
No. I am not a lawyer either.
You're the closest to a lawyer we have in this building.
I don't understand. So this was great. Thank you so much. And thank you all for listening this week. Follow us on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok.
Google.
Google us? Do you want us to Google?
No, I was thinking about Google Podcasts.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You can listen to us on Google, yes.
Google Podcasts.
You said follow. That's my fault.
Yeah. Okay. No, that's fine. I was confused. I was like, okay, Google
Apparently
us.
So was I.
Sure. At Apple Podcasts, Anchor, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. We've had a little rain lately, so use those rainy days to catch up on our episodes or just go back and re-listen.
I don't think it's going to rain for another 2 weeks now.
And then I've already forgotten. What did I say? Put in the comments. By the pool.
By the pool.
By the pool in the comments. We'll give you a shout out in our next episode.
And free
merch maybe two episodes from now because I think we're actually recording two today, so I won't have time to read. So eventually you'll get a shout out. Okay, so just keep listening. You just have to keep listening.
Good night, everybody.